everyone. Welcome to Crime Cults and Coffee. I'm Bryn, and happy Friday the 13th. Before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to go over some info regarding Crime Cults and Coffee moving forward. First things first, thank you to all who have continued to listen, even with 3 weeks in a row of re-released episodes. And I'm extremely thankful for your understanding and support. It's greatly appreciated, and although I was trying to be able to provide you with new content each week, this last stretch has been rough with the exhaustion, especially with having to complete things around the house before baby comes while still working and on minimal sleep. Anyway, some info regarding the podcast moving forward. This episode will be the last release before the baby comes, as he or she can be here any day now, although I'm still manifesting Halloween. There's still a lot to do, and I don't want to have to add researching, recording, editing, and getting episodes out in time into the mix. I don't want to bore you all with more re-releases either, so even though I would have loved to finish out the month of October, I think ending on the 13th will suffice. As for the future of Crime Cults and Coffee, I definitely do have plans of continuing it, although I don't want to make any promises of when new episodes will be back for now. I'm thinking I'll need at least 2 to 3 months away, if not more, in order to spend quality time with the baby while I'm not working, and to figure out baby's routine, along with my role of being a new mom. I hope you all understand and continue to support the podcast while I'm gone and once it eventually returns. To be totally transparent, I'm very nervous about stepping away for a bit. With all the work I've put into this podcast over the last 3 years, not to mention it's a massive part of my weekly routine, and I'm very passionate about the stories that are covered and the families that are involved. However, I do feel that it's necessary. I can only hope you all continue to do what you can for the true crime community in the meantime, and jump back on the journey alongside me once CCC is back. There is still justice that needs to be served for some of these cases, calls to action that can be acted upon, and all of the stories that can be shared. With that being said, I have no crazy way to segue this, so I will jump into this week's coffee review because I also don't have any recommendations for this week. I have been so busy, I really haven't been watching much new TV, listening to new podcasts, reading new books, anything like that. For this week's coffee review, I am actually reviewing a coffee for this final episode until CCC returns. I am going to be discussing a coffee from Milford's Daily Grind, which has been covered on this podcast in the past, and I'm going to be talking about their brown cinnamon sugar iced coffee. Milford's Daily Grind is located in Milford, PA, and I popped in there because I love their coffee. And I've never had their brown cinnamon sugar one. I typically go for, they have monthly or seasonal specials, and I typically try to try those out. So in regards to this one, I am not a massive fan compared to other coffees that I had from them before. This one, I think, was a little bit on the sweet side for me, surprisingly, because I do like brown cinnamon sugar. I don't know if my taste buds are off or what, but it was sweet, but there wasn't a strong noticing of the brown cinnamon sugar, if that makes sense. Like, if I didn't know this was a brown cinnamon sugar coffee, I wouldn't have possibly thought, oh, this is brown cinnamon sugar. I don't know if that makes sense, but it wasn't bad by any means. Their coffee is excellent. I think it was just a syrup that was added. And I would probably rate this one a 6.57, especially in comparison to other coffees I've had from them before, because Their coffee has been excellent, and I do love it there. I just wasn't a massive fan of this specific one. So make sure to check out Milford's Daily Grind if you're able to, if it's traveling distance or if you live nearby. And I can't wait to go back there again in the future. With that being said, let's get into today's episode. Oh, and this is the last time you're going to hear me say this for a while. It's making me emotional. So grab your coffee and have a morning with us. Today's episode is about Rachel Mellon Skemp. She is referenced in most media as Rachel Marie Mellon Skemp. However, it doesn't seem as though she was ever adopted by her stepfather, so her formal birth name would have been Rachel Marie Skemp. She was born October 13th, 1982 in Melrose Park, Illinois, and that was not intentionally done. Happy birthday to Rachel, because today is October 13th, and fun fact, I had actually researched and prepped this episode 2 or 3 weeks ago to record, but I ended up not recording it till now because, as mentioned, the exhaustion, which is why I did the re-releases. So the fact that this is actually coming out on her birthday is pretty amazing. And meant to be. So Rachel's mom's name is Amy Skemp and her dad is Jeff Skemp. Her mom was originally from the Philippines and her dad was American. Amy and Jeff got married in the early 1980s and they got divorced when Rachel was 3. Her dad, Jeff, then moved to Texas and Rachel remained in Illinois with her mom, Amy. At some point in 1985, Amy got into a relationship with another man named Vincent Mellon. They ended up getting married, and Mellon became Rachel's stepdad. Her mom and stepdad also ended up having 2 kids together, Jason, who was born in 1988, and Ashley, who was born in 1990. The family lived in a home together in Bolingbrook, Illinois. Rachel was 13 years old at the time of this story and went to Bernard J. Ward Middle School, aka BJ Ward Middle School. She was in the 7th grade. She was described as, quote, a bubbly and vivacious child with a great sense of humor, and that was a quote from Medium.com. She exuded positivity and was known as, quote unquote, the life of the party. Rachel had a big heart and was an honor student. She had told her dad at one point that her favorite song at the time was Hand in My Pocket by Alanis Morissette. She thrived in school and had plans to be a teacher when she got older, and also loved science, reading, and writing. Rachel was popular amongst her classmates, and her best friend was a girl named Carrie. Rachel was known to care about the environment and, quote, was passionate about recycling, and that was a quote from Reddit. She was a youth leader at her church, loved music, dancing, and singing, and she started to learn how to play guitar. Even with all these bright and shiny and positive things that surrounded Rachel, she had a rough home life at times. In 1990, Rachel's mom, Amy, had filed a restraining order against Rachel's stepdad, Mellon. He had allegedly hit Amy, verbally threatened Rachel, and pushed Amy down the stairs. At some point, this restraining order was dropped, and the couple reunited and continued their relationship. Reportedly, the police made calls to the house periodically in response to the domestic violence. Spring 1995, Rachel ran away. She had left a note, and this note said that her reasoning was that she was fearful of being blamed for something she didn't do. Her siblings had broken something, and she didn't want to have the blame put on her. The next day, she called her step-grandparents to pick her up after she had spent the night outside of a friend's house. In summer 1995, Rachel went to visit her dad, Jeff, for a month in Dallas, Texas. Apparently, while there, she mentioned that she wanted to live with her father. She even told this to her uncle and allegedly begged him to help her move. This, however, didn't come to fruition, and Rachel returned to living with her mom in Illinois. Christmas Day 1995 was sadly the last time that Jeff, who was Rachel's dad, had spoken to Rachel. Moving on to January 30th, 1996, something out of character was noted about Rachel. She was seen crying by her locker at school, and as mentioned, not only was Rachel usually happy-go-lucky and upbeat, even with hardships at home, but she loved school and was rarely seen upset in that setting. When her friends asked what was wrong, she said she wasn't feeling well. She also said she had a problem that she would, quote-unquote, take care of herself. January 31st, 1996, which was the next day, it's important to note that the weather on that day, according to reports, had been negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit. It also had high winds and was snowy outside. On this day, Rachel stayed home from school and her stepdad was home with her as he was unemployed at the time. Rachel's reasoning for staying home was due to a sore throat. Around 10:45 a.m., Rachel called her grandmother, Lucy Skemp. This was her grandma from her father's side. She had called her to thank her for a Christmas gift, and according to Lucy, the phone call was about 5 minutes long. She also said that at the end of the call, Rachel had gotten quiet. Grandma Lucy had then asked Rachel, quote, "Is he there?" in reference to Rachel's stepfather, Vincent Mellon. Rachel said yes, and that she had to go. From here, and this is according to Mellon, him and Rachel played Nintendo for about an hour. After playing video games, Rachel allegedly went to her room to take a nap. He recalled seeing her in her bed, quote, wrapped in a blue blanket. Mellon then said he went for a walk around 2:30 p.m. When he left the home, he said that Rachel was still sleeping and that he left to take the family dog for a walk. It's important that some reports state that not only was it negative 20 degrees out, but that there was also what was described as a blizzard happening that day. Mellon stated that he was on the walk with the dog for about 30 minutes and that when he had left the house, he left the front door unlocked. During this walk, the dog had allegedly gotten out of his collar and ran into a field nearby, apparently chasing a rabbit. Mellon said he then got back to the house around 3 p.m. He left the dog to run away in a so-called blizzard and reportedly said that he thought the dog would find its way back home on its own. He also said that he did not check on Rachel when he got back to the house. Around 3:15 p.m., Rachel's younger sister Ashley got home from school, and she noticed that Rachel was nowhere in the home. Between 4:30 p.m. and 5 p.m., someone saw the dog running loose on the street, and recognizing it as the Mellon Skemp family dog, they brought it back to the home. Around 5 p.m., Amy Skemp and Jason, who was Rachel's mom and brother, got home and the Bolingbrook police were called when Amy saw that Rachel was nowhere to be found. Hours later, the police arrived at the Mellon Skemp home. There were also no signs of forced entry within the home, although Mellon had stated that he left the front door unlocked when he left for his walk, so that could have explained that. Rachel's room was searched for clues as to where Rachel could be, and her blue blanket that Mellon had claimed to have last seen Rachel wrapped in was not on her bed where it normally was. That, along with two pillows that she had on her bed, were missing. However, some items that were still in her room that Rachel would have probably taken with her upon leaving the home by choice included the following: her shoes, wallet, purse, coat, and Walkman. The shoes and coat were especially concerning since, remember, there was a frigid snowstorm happening outside. Another item was discovered in Rachel's bedroom by investigators, her diary. A disturbing entry was discovered in which Rachel had written in August 1995. The entry said that her stepfather, quote, came into her room and began kissing her, touching her inappropriately, in order to warn her about, quote unquote, how predators behave and what characteristics she should look out for to be safe. And that was a quote from Reddit. Drawing some further suspicion towards Mellon, police had noticed that he had multiple cuts and scratches on his arm. He said that he had received them from working on a car earlier that day. There was also a steak knife found, and some reports say under a pillow in Rachel's room, some say under her bed. Searches were conducted for Rachel. By 6 p.m. the night of her disappearance, her best friend Carrie, as well as some other friends, looked all around the neighborhood, including a local park, for Rachel. Searches began immediately to try to locate Rachel. The area around her home was searched extensively. Ground, air, and water searches took place. Drones and geothermal imaging were used. Airports were also checked in case she had decided to leave the home to go to Texas to be with her dad, Jeff. There was no sign of Rachel anywhere. Speaking of her dad, Jeff, upon learning that his daughter was missing, reports say that he quit his job and moved from Texas to Illinois so that he could be there to look for Rachel. He also confronted Mellon at some point, questioning what had happened to Rachel. Allegedly, Mellon told him, quote, someone must have snatched her while I was out walking the dog. So into some aftermath following Rachel's disappearance. January 2000, a warrant was obtained by a grand jury. This warrant was for Vince Mellon's DNA. January 29, 2000, Mellon was brought to the Bolingbrook Police Station. He was held for 9 hours and pled the fifth the entire time he was questioned about the day that Rachel disappeared. Samples of his saliva, hair, and blood were taken. A lie detector test was also conducted at least once for Mellon, in which he failed, but depending on your opinion, that aspect can be taken with a grain of salt. Just figured it was worth mentioning. At some point, Rachel's mom, Amy, was also given a lie detector test, in which she passed, as well as questioned by police. According to reports, Amy feels that Mellon is innocent in regards to Rachel's disappearance. Weird fact, there is also a connection with convicted murderer Drew Peterson in relation to Rachel's case. Peterson had been a former Bolingbrook police sergeant. Not only that, but he had worked on Rachel's case. And if you don't know the case of Drew Peterson, it's a highly popularized one. Go and check that one out. During the year 2000, the grand jury investigation ended. In mid-2000, Amy, Mellon, and the other children moved to Tennessee, and they later relocated back to Illinois. In May 2002, the city of Bolingbrook made a plaque and planted a tree in Rachel's honor. Mellon has since been in trouble with the law. In 2003, he had a domestic battery charge. In 2005, he was charged with drunk driving. And August 2006, he was charged with 3 counts of domestic battery and 1 count of battery. In either the 2003 or 2006 charges, the incident had been in regards to his son. In 2017, he was arrested for drunk driving. Allegedly, and this is according to some reports, Bolingbrook PD has stated that they feel Mellon had involvement with the disappearance and possible murder of Rachel, but there is not enough evidence to prove this. He remains a suspect. Rachel's dad, Jeff, and her best friend, Carrie, are still trying to find answers and work to bring awareness to Rachel's case. 27 years later, Rachel Marie Mellon Skemp is still missing. No one has been charged with her disappearance, and her case remains active. According to WGNTV.com, quote, preserved evidence is examined annually to see if new technology may unearth some answers. Police say private investigators continue to follow the case. Rachel was described as last being seen in yellow sweatpants, a pink top, red house slippers, and the blue blanket. If you have any information regarding Rachel or her disappearance, please contact Bolingbrook PD at 630-226-0600 or the Bolingbrook Police Department Investigations Division at 630-226-8620 or you can contact Crime Stoppers at 630-378-4772. And callers can also submit a web tip at bolingbrookcrimestoppers.org. These can be submitted anonymously. So as always, that information regarding how to contact if you have any information will be included in the show notes as well as on the Facebook page. And with that being said, there is no more information in regards to the disappearance of Rachel Mellon Skemp. But again, happy birthday to Rachel. And I am so glad that her dad, Jeff, and her best friend are still trying to find these answers and that her case is still open and police are still doing diligent work on her case. And in regards to the preserved evidence, they didn't really elaborate on that, but I'm glad that there's at least something for them to continue to look into with the evolution of technology and genetic technology and the amazing things that they do with DNA these days. Hopefully, some answers will be brought forward as to what happened to Rachel or where she may be or who was involved with her disappearance. And from here, I think I will jump into the episode spiel. So you can find Crime Cults and Coffee on Instagram. That's where I post pictures of coffee reviewed, any information regarding past episodes, past coffee reviews, listener reposts, any important information regarding the podcast, which probably won't have much right now up until the point where I'm like, hey, we're back. In the meantime, you can also find information for merch in the highlights as well on Instagram and shop it. I mean, there's limited sweatsuits left for this fall weather, winter weather, and beanies and mugs. And if you want some tank tops, there's still some of those left too. Maybe layer under a flannel. Who knows? But I will repost links for that as well before the weekend is up so you can have easy access to it if interested. The link tree in the bio has most of the listening platforms that this podcast is on. If you go to Facebook at Crime Cults and Coffee, that's where I put any resources, photos, links, calls to action. And as mentioned in regards to this episode specifically, as well as other episodes that contain calls to action, you can always find those in the show notes as well. If you have a listener story or case suggestion, please don't be shy. Especially now would be the time to send some in so I can get some stocked up before this podcast comes back in a couple months or so. And in the meantime, it'll give me some content to read from all you amazing listeners. And it'll just be a good time for me to kind of sort through and organize that stuff as well. So if you have a listener story or a case suggestion, you can email me at crimecultsandcoffee@gmail.com or DM me at crimecultsandcoffee on Instagram. Also, if you'd be so kind and if you like listening, you can leave a rate and review on any platform that allows you to do so. This might include Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on any listening platform of your choice. You can like, you can follow, you could subscribe, and that will let you know when new episodes come out. And I'm not going to say each week because that's on pause for now, but that will definitely let you know when a new episode is back. So with that being said, thank you again for all of your continued support and listening into today's episode. In the meantime, when able, I will try to be active on the Instagram and Facebook pages with any updates, info moving forward, and to keep communication open with all the listeners who interact with the podcast. I hope you stay safe, stay vigilant, and I can't wait to be back with you all in the future. Until next time, enjoy the rest of your spooky season. And I love you. Bye. Regarding this case and our resources,
follow us at Crime Cults and Coffee on Instagram and Facebook.